Welcome back to an exciting episode of Extra Feature Enemy. Today I have a guest who I've known for 10 years at least, and he's wrote many books, and I finally had time to read one. It's not his bad, my bad, but he did finally give me a copy so I could read it. Welcome to the show, David Darling.
Hi, Simon. Thanks for having me.
Oh, it's wonderful to have you. I mean, it was really nice after you've written, I don't know, six books. You finally had the time to give me one to read.
True enough. Yeah, glad you got it and glad you read it.
Well, I was thinking of using it as a coaster, but I thought you might be disappointed. So I thought there was a better use of reading the book.
True story, yes.
So let's start at the beginning. Why did you want to write books? I mean, you have a full-time job. You have a family. I know you're a busy guy. You have fishing and lots of other things you like to do.
True. Well, I think the natural progression from reading to writing evolved over, 40 years. I turned around one day and I picked up a book while I was recovering from shoulder surgery. And as I was reading this book, it was just absolutely horrible. I turned around and the words I said changed everything. I said, well, I can write a better book than this. Oh my gosh. So I literally had months of nothing to do. So why not? Let's go for it. So I did. And I started writing.
Okay. Well, that perfect answer. That leads to my first question. How long does it take you to write a book?
I've written a book my first novel took me about a year and a half to write. And then I've written other books within a month. And my average book is about 5 to 6 months.
Not normal, I would say. Now, yeah. When you have ideas for stories, I mean, you've written a detective novel. You've now written a science fiction novel. Obviously, you've written other books. Do you have a book you keep all your ideas in, or you just are mentally one of those people that can recall everything?
Well, I wish I was the second person there. No, I keep an ideas folder within my computer. And on that, I put everything for it might be just two paragraphs in a Word document of a story idea. And then I'll file that away. And then I'll come back to it later when I have something else to develop on that idea. And right now I got 20, 30 different documents in that ideas folder. And lo and behold, at one point I picked it up and I started, let's work with this, the time travel novel idea. I've all time travel for science fiction fantasy has always been a popular subject and one I've enjoyed. So I was glad to finally get to that project.
So what I was thinking here, so you have ideas here from, let's say, 5 years or whatever long your author career has been. Do you ever look at an idea and go, nope, that was dumb, and delete it? Or you feel you should never delete anything?
Well, there is a point where you got to realize that it's just not going to be viable. So my first novel, I wrote a military spy type thriller, and I was in mid-writing, so to speak, on book two, the sequel. And the whole premise within the book was of a plague that the Chinese developed and that is they're looking to spread all over the world. Well, lo and behold, COVID struck. And my only fault was I didn't get that up and out any sooner. So at that point, I decided, the world doesn't need to hear about a pandemic anymore. So I shelved that project and it's still sitting there. It's not going anywhere, but there are ideas for revamping it, obviously. So it takes some time.
I want to go a little bit more in your writing process. I mean, you are a busy person. I mean, you're not just a single guy leading life. How much time day or a week do you devote to your writing? And do you have a focus every time you write? Or sometimes you're just not writing character ideas down or ideas you have in general. Does that count in that time?
Yep, I understand. Okay, well, first, there is time. If you want to have time for a project, any project, or for me to write, you got to make it happen. So instead of waking up at 7 o'clock every morning, I wake up at 5 o'clock every morning. I know it's not for everybody, but it's not too bad. But by the time I get my coffee, scroll through social media, emails, all that kind of stuff, I 5:30, my fingers are tapping away on the keyboard. I'll look over what I wrote yesterday, and then I'll turn around and get right back at it. So that the quiet time in the house for me gives me the most bang for the buck. But then when I turn around and maybe in the afternoon, I'll write for another 20, 30 minutes, or a night after dinner, instead of watching TV, I'll write again. For me, the most important part is momentum. I got to keep that momentum going. So I do the same routine, Saturdays, Sundays, 7 days a week, holidays. It doesn't matter. Once you get into writing, I keep that up. And along with all that, specifically for writing, that what I said before can apply to any goal or dream, you know, you make your time, but specifically for writing, a word count. So I have a goal, a word count to achieve every day. So if I do 2,000 words a day, well, within 3 months, I'm going to have a 90,000 word novel done, ready to go. So I maintain that 2,000 words a day, and it keeps me going. Gets the job done.
Where 3 months down the line or 6 months down the line, you've written your 90,000 words, for roughly, for my sake of argument.
Yep.
Who do you edit? Do you do your editing, self-edit first, or do you send it off to an editor, or how does that work for you?
First off, if any author or writer that believes they can fully edit their own work, all I could say is if you think you can, good for you, but most of us in the world, the other 99%, would agree that you just got to give your head a shake. It can't be done. But what I can do is the rough edits. So that's where I stop writing, and then I go back and I back to page one, and I work my way through. Well, this doesn't sound right. This isn't what I meant. You got grammar and spell checker and all these different programs available through. I use Microsoft Word. You could use Grammarly, Pro Writing Aid, all these programs. They're not perfect, but they help. So they might catch the spelling mistake or commas, and anything you can do to make your editor have an easier job, I would recommend. So after I go through the whole novel, I bundle it all. I wait a week and let it sit, and then I go back to it. And I read it through again, and I try and do it on a different format. You can either print it out. I could put it on my tablet. I could put it as a PDF, any type of different format than what I've been reading it currently as. And then I reread it again as a book. Usually by this time, I'm quite sick of the story because I've read it so many times. And then I bundle it all off to the editor, my editor that I work with. And then I sit back and I wait.
Now, my question is, so you read your book four times.
That'd be nice. I'll be honest, by the time I'm done, it's closer to 15.
Oh, my God. No, thank you. I don't want to read anything for 15 times.
Yeah. So, for example, my latest novel, Edge of Time, I've not only read it that many times, I've revised it, and then you have to read it again to check your revisions. Is this storyline viable? Specifically because it was a time travel novel, and I'm jumping in and around on different locations and in time. So you got to make sure the storyline, the storyboard is consecutive all the way throughout.
Okay, don't worry. We're going to get further in your novel. I just had a bunch of general questions to get in.
Oh, no, it's all good.
We're going to get further in the novel before. I got one more last general question. When you're writing, do you write only one book at a time, or two books, or three books?
Ideally, one at a time. Does it turn out to be that way? No. I need a break sometimes. Like, I can only... For example, if I'm writing a police thriller novel, you get so immersed in it, and then you need a change. You know, like, oh my God, I've been doing this for 2 or 3 months. And I go, well, let's do something else. So I got a fantasy novel that I'm working on too. And I got a private detective story series that I'm working on. as well as a military thriller. Like, I got all these things ready to go, but when I can't just keep working on this main project, I need a break, I'll switch tracks.
So you're still doing your 2 hours of writing every morning then?
Correct. It might not be on my main novel, but yes, oh, for sure. You got to keep writing.
Okay, so let's get into your book a little bit. I'm just going to go generally. I'm not going to go into too much depth. There will be a few minor things. Character names. How do you think of character names? Like, do you have a name when you first start writing going, Peter went to the fridge? I mean, something basic like that. Obviously, you're not starting that basic. But how do you know that character's name is Peter? Or do you visualize that game character?
Well, I'll go back to that novel, Edge of Time. So I wanted to write more about a farmer in the late 1700s. And that's how the story starts. So, Google is an incredible resource. So when I go popular names in the 1700s, and I go, well, the character's full name is Clement Wallace.
Correct.
Well, Wallace, he has some background and maybe some Scottish roots. So, you know, I can narrow it down, and I go through literally the list of names, and I go, I can't picture myself writing Francis so many times as a male character name. This name could work. It might not work. So I zeroed in on Clement, and I like the name, and it fit the character I developed rather well. So, for example, I went with that. Other times, for example, Brad Holman is the protagonist. He's another main character within that novel. I had his name as something else to start, Paul something I think I used, and I used it as a placeholder. So I'll go through, and then I'm a third of the way through the novel, and I'm like, yeah, you know what, Paul Simon isn't going to be viable as a name. So I'm not feeling it, and so I'll you know, takes 2 seconds to change one word all the way through a Word document. And so, you know, I'll play around with the name a little bit until I find it. But that's about it.
Okay.
So I do some research. Yeah.
Okay. As you're writing these characters, no problem. You do a lot of research. And I would argue reading your book, I did notice. So how do you do your research on, like, just basic things like FBI protocol, airport protocol, and the big one, time travel? Because that's the most major part. I mean, do you use a spreadsheet? I mean, I understand the FBI protocol. You have a basic. You've watched movies, but you go deeper than that. I mean, right. I would be a sarissa stuff and go, oh, I read a wiki page. I know how the FBI works. But you do not. You definitely do a deeper research. So how does that work?
For example, my first novel in the police thriller series called The Tipping Point is about a police officer in Wyoming. I made up a mythical, a fictional town in there called Arrow Point. But in that within Wyoming, so I had the police officer doing certain things, and you know, one of the first things he had to do was secure a crime scene, fairly typical in a police thriller novel. Well, I didn't quite know how to secure a crime scene, but I have been in the Army. I was in the Canadian Forces for 17 years, and I know there's a situation or a training event for literally everything. So there's a course on everything. And I'm going, well, that's probably true with the police as well. So what I did, I went to the Douglas Police Academy website in Wyoming, and I downloaded the course package for basically securing a crime scene, and I did it myself. So I know the different, because I'm writing in the States, I wanted to learn from that instead of talking to my friends in law enforcement here in Ontario. So I learned, you know, entrance and exit routes from a crime scene, how to secure a crime scene, areas around the crime scene, primary, secondary, different searching techniques, etc. So I learned it. So I apply and I did similar things with the FBI. How does an FBI secure a crime scene? Well, it's almost identical. And time travel. Wow. How did I learn about time travel? Well, I studied pretty much everything I could get my hands on, from Stephen Hawking to Neil deGrasse Tyson on, and I watched all their theories of time travel. I studied parts of a particle accelerator at this location in at the University of British Columbia. I can only research so much before it doesn't become relevant anymore. So I emailed back and forth with the university at the program where they had the particle accelerator at the Triumph building, I believe it was, and which was real. You know, everything I wrote there was based on reality, including the floor plan and the layout, including the maintenance room. So stuff like that, I thought, lends a certain amount of authenticity. Last thing, as a reader myself, this author doesn't know what he's talking about. There's no safety on a clock. Well, you do your research, and that's what I hope I did.
I just want to bring you back to a point you mentioned. You said you use U.S. police services. You didn't want to use Canadian police services. Is that to get your books more popular in the States as opposed to Canada, because you're dealing with U.S. readers?
My main readership, 80%, is within the United States. So I make all my novels more I write in the U.S. language. I use color, C-O-L-O-R, instead of C-O-L-O-U-R. I use miles, not kilometers, stuff like that. When I was having a police officer in Wyoming, then I had to learn about the U.S. procedures for that versus Canadian, which I'm sure are fairly similar.
Now, I want to go back to the book. When you're about to reveal a big plot point, how do you pace that out? I mean, obviously, I've read your book. I understand. But, I mean, I find sometimes you'll drop me right in a chapter with a big plot point, and sometimes you always have the page churner at the end of the chapter. What do you prefer, or you just like to play with the reader?
Playing with a reader, I don't know if I'd call it that, but I would tug at the emotions or enthrall the reader. If you have a plot where it's fast, hard action, boom, 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 at the end of two or three chapters, you're going to have a reader that's not out of breath, but, oh my gosh, the pacing is so fast. So you bring them up and you bring them down a little bit, but you still want to keep them reading, so you have a little intrigue, and that's a chapter hook, and that'll want them to turn to the next chapter right away to find out, that's what that last sentence meant in chapter four. Now I can keep going in chapter five. Sometimes if I've had a moment or a whole chapter where it's just, I don't want to say an information dump, but more towards the lines of supporting information within the story. You need this information to continue, but it might not be that exciting. While I can do it with intrigue, I could do it with a certain amount of suspense different ways to bring the reader in. But if I then after that, I go, well, it's time to pick it up a little bit here. So this is where the pacing comes in as you're naturally writing. Let's ramp it up. Let's just get a good action scene, but let's develop this scene more to give the reader something to keep flipping those pages and keep the story moving. For me, that's the most important part, to keep the story moving.
I also made a note that you definitely use internal monologues to get a lot of your points across. Like you have a character, I would say Brad does it more in Clement. Clement just is there more, I find, as a service to the story. He is important, but Brad is our main narcissist for pretty much all of this. We have to pay attention to Brad.
Yeah.
So when you're writing, you don't really have a lot of dialogue, at least in this book. I haven't read your other book, so I can't say.
Yeah.
You like to do that internal monologue when Brad's talking to himself, so we're in his head a lot. Mm-hmm. Clement's not so much in his head. I mean, maybe a couple times, but I can't.
Yeah, there's a few times, but not as much. Yeah. So when you're just having one character within maybe a chapter or two, how do you engage the reader? How do I endear you as a reader to that character a little bit more? Well, I could do that by changing the point of view of the reader. So it could be in the first person, like, oh, I picked up this phone. What was I thinking? I don't know. Stuff like that. I could have them talking out loud, but having a character talking out loud all the time, well, that might twist to other problems. So internal dialogue does much the same thing. It allows the reader to get into the head of the character a little bit more and understand them. Wow, why would I do this? Or that makes no sense. Maybe the reader's thinking along those same lines. So it's an endearment and a change of point of view to entice the reader, I found.
So I also noticed in your book, you love to use description to set my scene. Before I even get into a scene and introduce a character, I find you really dwell on description, and that's all the time. Whether you're dealing with a school, whether you're dealing with a cabin, whether you're dealing with Fort Knox, description first. Is that normal for you, or is that just the case in this book?
There's a couple different ways of doing that. But first, as a reader, I like to know what the scene is. So I could slowly describe the scene throughout the chapter, but it doesn't have the same impact. So, you know, this character picked up something and he's stalking towards the house. What's he wearing? Who's this guy look like? What's the house look like? What time of day is it? Is it midnight or is it noon? So setting the scene, I find is fairly important, because without that, as a reader, I don't have the interest. So if I don't know what's going on, it's like watching a movie and it's all dark. Well, as exciting as that is, no thanks. It doesn't do much for me.
Okay, what do you do if you have an idea why you're out? So you're out to dinner with your wife and your lovely daughter.
Yeah.
You have an idea, you're like, oh, crap, I can use that in one of those little post-it notes. What do you do? Yep. Do you carry a notebook, post-it note, punch it in on your phone, or you just hope you remember?
Hoping I remember, I found doesn't work so well with me. I'll open up my phone and I'll text myself a quick message or a voice recording. And then I go, oh, this might be a good idea for this, or this is how this scene should end. This is where I am. While I'm not stuck on this scene, I go, well, this is clearly a better way to do it. And then I'll refer to that note and, I'll use that.
This may be a question your wife does not want to hear. Have you ever wrapped up something early because of this situation?
No, not that I'm aware of. No,
not yet is what you're trying to say. I got it. We'll let you know.
Not yet. Yes.
How early in your writing process do you write the end of your book? Do you write it early? Do you write it late? Or sometimes when you get there?
I'll change that around a little bit into, there's two types of writing styles generally assessed by, authors. They're referred to as, pantsers or plotters. Pantsers are seat of your pants. Off you go. I don't know what I'm going to write. I don't know what I'm writing, but I'm going to sit down and I'm going to write a book. Okay. Then this guy did this and it's organic, it's flowing. They don't really have a direction. Maybe a few ideas and they work towards it. Plotters will sit down and they'll write a detailed description of each chapter throughout the entire book, beginning, middle, and end. They'll have all that. I can't do that. I've tried it. It doesn't work for me. But what I do have is I can't remember a grocery list, but I can remember stuff. Like, I want to have a novel about a character that has some difficulties in the beginning. He ends up learning on his own. He'll go there, and I'll have an ending in mind. And then I just start writing. So I could keep all these beginning, middle, and end somewhat in my mind, and then I free flow organic pantser writing up until then. So that's how I operate.
It's a cabin of real place.
No, but I wish it was. It sounds pretty good. I'd love to hang out there.
Well, just because I know you well enough to know it might have been someplace you visited is what I was thinking in my head.
Yes. That particular cabin doesn't exist, but it's based upon a simple one-room open concept cabin, which is typical back in the 1700s. They didn't have high ceilings, lower ceilings, easier to heat.
In your afterword, you have a note. Did your wife get upset about you laying all your pages on the living room floor?
Oh, she was at work. She wasn't even home. So, yeah, in order to maintain the proper timeline within a time travel notebook or story, I had, I think, 38 pages of printed notes spread across the living room floor in a large straight line. And I'd go through and I'd make note, well, this can't happen yet because this has to be here. Then I'd take that page and then shuffle everything back down. For me, like I said before, as a reader, mistakes within a story, within a book, will pull me out of the story, and that's not something I want. So I made sure everything's accurate within the timeline. Now, as you're reading the book, some things in the beginning just don't seem to make a lot of sense as a reader, but they really do later on. And then you'll go, yes, that already happened, because I know what's going to happen next because it's a time travel story. So, yeah, getting all those little details I thought was pretty important. So I'm glad I hope I achieved it. So.
Just want to back up one question. Are you still self-published?
Yes, although now I'm working with a literary agent, and I got a book up for it's being pitched to publishers as we speak.
Okay, so before we get there, this, and I can ask this question. How do you publish your books?
Right now I'm publishing through Amazon. I do KDP, so it's the Kindle Direct Print for all my novels. But I'm also through Kobo, Google Play, Barnes & Noble, Indigo Books, all those other places, as well as I use another Ingram Books. So bookstores could order my novel, or libraries, stuff like that. So it's a more of a print-on-demand service.
Okay, we're on everybody's favorite part of the show, where I get to ask you three random questions that you don't really know the answers to. But
sounds good.
Just because I usually ask everybody their favorite film, but you didn't bring me a film, you brought me books. I'm going to ask you your favorite book.
In what genre?
But you know what? People like to do this to me, so I will throw romance out.
Romance. Okay. Do I have a particular novel that I like in romance? No. I know it's not really a genre.
Horror.
But yeah, I would go back to Stephen King, The Stand, unedited, uncut. It's one of my favorite novels. He's such a writer that endears you to that character literally within the first page or two, and you're hooked. You're sucked into that story, and it's a masterclass on how to become an author. It's just so enwrapping of your soul, brings you right in. So that I really enjoyed.
Who will play the leads in your movie?
For Brad Holman, although
he's the FBI guy.
Yeah, there's a slight age difference, but I picture someone like Colin Frith, the Irish.
Totally work.
I picture that guy. As to Clement, I don't have any favorites yet. However, the female main character that comes into the second half, Virginia, I picture Gal Gadot, maybe more of a blonde, but that's just probably a daydream there.
When people always ask you to read a book, what, Dave, I've read all my books, what should you, besides your own, because we know they're all good, what book do you recommend to people?
Well, if somebody likes a fast-paced action adventure, Brad Thor, Vince Flynn, Jack Carr. those are some of the names that'll break you right into that genre. The spy thriller, maybe a slight revenge story in there, and that'll any of those novels will just open up a whole new world.
Okay. Edge of Time. Where can we find your great book, Edge of Time? Because I know where my copy is. It's sitting over there on my desk.
Well, first, there's a couple different places. The first place, all the links are available through my website, which is daviddarlingbooks.com. And on my books page, the links will take you to Amazon, Barnes & Noble, and absolutely anywhere books are sold in any format, ebook or paper book, physical. So, and that'll do it. If your library, you want to borrow it from the library, ask your librarian to get that book, and they can.
Thank you, Dave, and have a great day.
Great. Thank you very much, Simon, for having me. Have a good one.
Hey, thanks for listening to that interview with Simon. Can you please rate and review us on iTunes and Spotify? And if you have any extra change, feel free to send it to us at PayPal. And that's extrafeatures@gmail.com on PayPal. Thank you. Bye.